Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening today. We've got a great show coming up today and a great week. I'm very excited about this week. If you don't know, Thursday we're going to do the live broadcast of the show right here at the University of Northwestern. We've got a beautiful media room, so we'll have lots of elbow room. So we're not going to be cramped into a studio. We're going to have a little bit of space, and we'll have a lot of fun. I've got four of my favorite guests coming into studio, so it's going to be a great time. So if you have not made plans to come by, it's going to be from 3 to 5, of course, Central Standard Time. If you're planning on flying in from Hartford, why? You don't have to. Well, if you want to come, I'd love for you to come. But anyway, we've got listeners coming in from all over. I think registration is almost closed. We've got maybe a couple seats left. We'd love to have you come by. Go to myfaithradio.com, go to the Afternoons with Bill Arnold page, and you can check it out. Love to see you. Shake your hand. Meet you in person. That's fun for me. We've got a great show coming up. We're going to have Justin and Lindsay Holcomb in just a minute after the break. They counsel victims of sexual assault and domestic abuse. A little bit of a sensitive subject, but boy, are they smart, and they handle it beautifully. We'll take a short break and be back with Justin and Lindsay Holcomb in just a minute.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way, you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment. You were at work, or something urgent came up. And for those really busy days, you could listen early in the morning or late at night when things were calmer, and you could take the time to reflect and meditate on what you heard. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store to gain instant access to Faith Radio programs and previous shows. It really is that simple. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime. Download the Faith Radio app today and don't miss a thing. Once again, go to iTunes or Google Play on your mobile device and search for Faith Radio to download the free Faith Radio app and start listening today.
Welcome to the show. I am glad you're with me today. There are so many scary child abuse statistics out there that I don't even know where to begin. Let me just throw out a couple. About one in three girls and one in seven boys will be sexually abused during childhood. A child is much more likely to be sexually abused by a recognized, trusted adult than by a stranger. And most victims of child sexual abuse know their attacker. 34% of assailants were family members and 58% were acquaintances. And only 7% of the perpetrators were strangers to the victim. I am so glad to have on our studio line today Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. They are two people that have decided to tackle this issue in a Christ-centered way and give us this wonderful information as to how to process this as believers. They've written a book called God Made All of Me. Justin is an Episcopal priest serving in the Diocese of Central Florida. I don't get to say that word very often. And he's also teaches theology and apologetics at Gordon-Conwell and the Reformed Theological Seminary. Lindsay counsels victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. She previously worked at a sexual assault crisis center and also served as a case manager at a domestic violence shelter. Lindsay provided crisis intervention to victims of sexual assault and domestic violence and conducted a variety of training seminars to help service providers. The two of them are on my studio line today. You get two Holcombs in one day. I call that the Daily Double. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having us and for the wonderful introduction and for taking the time to shine a bright light on a really dark subject.
It's so dark, and it's horrifying, to be honest. And I read these statistics, and I just read a couple, and it just makes my skin crawl.
Well, and that's the appropriate response, is the most people think that the prevalence is a lot less than it really is. I mean, the statistics that you gave are the same statistics that we have, and that basically one in five children will be victims of sexual abuse. And that's staggering, because no one wants to look at all the kids in their life and divide by five. And that is shocking and overwhelming to people. But when you find out who the perpetrators are, that's when it really gets scary, because most people think, hey, my kids are at a good school, we go to a good church, they're going to be just fine. It's going to be all those other kids that don't go to, you know, churches, and they're hanging out at, you know, other places. They're the ones, and that's not the case. It's 90% basically of perpetrators are known to the child or the family. And because of that, parents need to be wise and vigilant. And so it without creating, we want to talk about this in a way that doesn't create paralyzing fear, but has kind of like the cold splash of water to wake people up and say, okay, parents, start paying attention. Don't just trust the organizations that they have policies and procedures, that they have hired really great, wonderful, godly people. But it should be getting your attention a little bit more than it has been.
Mm-hmm. If you wouldn't mind, start by talking about the mind of a young child who could be preyed upon, and the mind of the predator.
Lindsay, you want to talk about kids?
I can jump in on the kid part. You know, when we look at the children that kind of characteristics of who is being abused, you could say, well, sexual assault knows no barriers, no boundaries. It goes into any community, any socioeconomic group, any religion, ethnicity. It is a public health epidemic. At the same time, I would say children that are particularly vulnerable to sexual abuse are those who don't have adults being vigilant over their lives, who don't have adults giving them a foundation of, you know, this conversation of their body. Your body was made beautiful and strong by God, but, you know, it also has private parts. And so maybe they haven't had this conversation that gives them a layer of protection, or a conversation of what to do in the case of something feeling uneasy or uncomfortable, or encountering an adult or an older child that maybe puts you in a situation. So children that are particularly vulnerable aren't having those conversations, maybe because they're unattended to in the afternoon and the evenings, because both parents are working, or it's a home where it's a single family run home, or they're in a foster home, or, you know, there's a lot of different stories that you could kind of look at and say, oh, yes, this child has been vulnerable. But typically predators, they are very savvy, and they know which children are and aren't being attended to by caregivers that are responsible and really in the child's life and checking in. How are you doing? How are you feeling? How does this coach make you feel? How does this, you know, counselor make you feel, or doctor make you feel? How are these adults in your life? The predators know which children are vulnerable, which children are lonely and seeking someone to come along and provide them some attention.
So the child, going back to the child, and I'll talk a little bit about predators. The child is trusting. They're, especially if they've been told to obey adults. If the blanket statement to a child is, hey, obey your authorities, well, that can be really confusing when the authority is actually causing harm. And so helping children think through, what does it look like for them to have standards and boundaries for themselves and body integrity, and just helping them think through that. So a child is thinking, for the most part, when things are happening, I guess I deserve this, I guess I asked for this. They're assuming that they're to blame. Most children feel guilty for what's happening to them. That's what's going on in the heart and mind of a child, is I guess I did something to deserve this, and so I guess this is what's supposed to happen. And so that's part of the heartbreak, is the trust of a child and their vulnerability is being used against them to cause their own destruction. Now, the mind of a perpetrator, perpetrators on average, the average child sexual perpetrator has over 100 victims. It's actually 120 victims in their lifetime. They are masterful at deceiving and getting away with it, but also grooming. Sometimes child sexual perpetrators are immediate, kind of like, there's a kid, I'm just going to go for it right now and just do this horrible thing. Most of them are really strategic, and they will groom over weeks, months, or years. And grooming is the behavior of slowly building a rapport and relationship and connection with that child. They will go slowly. They will prepare them, give them words of affirmation, gifts, and slowly violate physical boundaries. They rarely is it just a immediate jump to the abuse. So that way it's you know, the image that many people know is the frog in the kettle. You can put a frog in a boiling pot of water and slowly turn up the heat. Well, that's what the perpetrator is trying to do. They're slowly turning up their behavior until it you know, crosses lines and it becomes abusive. But they're grooming. So the fact that a perpetrator, they know where to go to find children. They know how to interact with children. They know how to interact with adults so people don't call them into question. They know how to respond with something a little bit shady or suspicious happens. They know how to respond with humility and worldly sorrow that looks like repentance, that no one actually pursues them. So they know how to get away with it. So parents need to be as savvy as a perpetrator to help protect their children and to help their child learn how to protect their bodies. That's what's going on with the perpetrator. There can be numerous things that are playing into that. Many perpetrators have been abused also, and so they learn how to abuse by being abused. There is some significant spiritual deficiency, emotional and psychological deficiency, and you could probably use stronger language, going on that they think that they can rationalize their behavior in some way, that the taking pleasure in the sexual violation of a vulnerable child requires callousness of heart and soul, and there's a significant dysfunction happening, that they would eventually try to normalize that and rationalize that.
I just feel like you gave me a succinct definition of evil.
And that's the word. The Bible has a category,
mm-hmm.
and it is evil doer. The Bible has a few categories. We're all sinners,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we're all in Adam, and Adam sinned, and we are sinners by word, and we're sinners by nature, you know, by original sin. We are born into sin, so we're sinners by nature and deed. We are sinners by our nature, but we actually sin by things we do and say and think. So we're all sinners. The Bible has another category, which is fool. The Psalms and the Proverbs talk about the fool. The fool says in the heart there is no God. The fool doesn't trust in the Lord. So the fool is like a sinner who doesn't turn to God. You know, sinners, we're all sinners. Those of us who turn to God, well, we're the forgiven ones. The ones who don't are the fools. There's another category, which is the evildoer. It's very different to be a fool and an evildoer. An evildoer is someone who is actively, strategically plotting against God and the images of God. And so there's a satanic nature, and I'm not trying to use hyperbole. Satan hates God, and God made people in his image. And so humans are the image bearers and reflection of God. So who is Satan's enemy? Well, Satan's enemy is really God, not us. I mean, we're Satan's enemy because God loves us as his creatures, and we reflect God. But Satan really hates God, so he wants to go after and destroy God, and he can't. So what does he do? He goes for the next best thing. I'm going to do anything I can to destroy the reflection of my enemy in his creation. And so those who side with Satan are trying to destroy the image of God and other humans. They're exploiting and causing great evil. So evildoer is the appropriate word for a child sexual predator, is they are siding with the evil one to try to destroy and snuff out the image of God that they reflect.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm talking to Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. We're going to take a break probably for about an hour because I have to go home and take a shower just hearing about this. It's so sad and so disturbing that predators are grooming children over time to abuse them. It absolutely makes me sick. But they have got a great book called God Made All of Me. It's the way we talk to our kids and the way we help kids understand that God made all of us, and we need to know how to have that discussion with them. So we're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Justin and Lindsay Holcomb in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. They've written a number of books. The one we're discussing today is God Made All of Me, and it's a book about being able to talk to your kids about sexual abuse and their bodies. And did I say that well?
Yes.
Good.
It's hard to thread the needle, isn't it?
It kind of is, yeah.
Start talking about, I'm going to talk about really dark things to a child. What do we do? What do we say? That's the pain point. And to the point that you would say, am I saying this right? So you did. The subtitle of our book is God Made All of Me, How to Help Children Protect Their Bodies. But how do we help prevent, warn, and prepare our child to, one, not experience it? If they do, how do they talk about it?
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
If I may ask the question, because I'm still stuck on the perpetrator a little bit. If they can be so convincing, what percentage of perpetrators are fooling the parents? It must be close to 100%.
It's most of them are getting away with it.
Yeah.
I don't know the numbers on that one, but a large majority of perpetrators are getting away with it. That's why they have 120 plus victims in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm. It's a staggering number. Okay, let's shift now to the victim. If a child, they have no language or ability to process with words what has just been happening to their bodies. The violation is so evil. How do they start to move from this tragedy into a place of processing it with adults and starting to heal?
Hey, Lindsay, do you want to? We have little areas that one of us is really,
yeah,
and this is right up Lindsay's alley.
Okay,
so.
Good.
Well, I was just going to say, when we decided to write the book, it was to give parents and the children the language of how to talk about this, because we found that parents weren't having these conversations, so then their children didn't have the language then to go and say, you know, this is what happened to my body, this is where I was, you know, this is where I've been traumatized, this is where I've been affected. So the biggest thing we say for parents, start, build a foundation from the very early years of naming the child's body parts. Give the proper anatomical, like the proper terms of a child's private parts. That helps a lot when it comes, you know, later on down the road, if there is a situation where something has happened or a child's been exposed to something, the child will at least be able to name, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that is huge for children's protection, but also just for their own sense of, my body is beautiful. It was created by God. There's no shame in my body. There's no shame in how God made me. I am strong. I'm made in the image of God, and all the parts of me have a name. And that's, there's, you know, medical terms that my body has. So I think that actually empowers the child to feel very strong and empowered about their body. And it helps if a perpetrator comes along and tries to touch a child or expose himself to a child, the child knows and actually can name it. And it can freak the perpetrator out of just knowing this child is kind of already has a foundation laid. Their parents are talking to them about these things. So I think one of the biggest things is when a child is trying to tell their parents something, this happened to me, or this, I don't feel right with this person, the parent needs to figure out, why is my child not want to hug their aunt or their uncle or grandma? Why is my child not want to go with this particular person who's been in our life? They need to stop and ask the questions and figure out what's going on, rather than just pushing their child, you need to hug grandma and grandpa, you need to go off with Uncle Tom. And if they start to notice that their child's uncomfortable, stop and figure out what's going on and ask the questions. And we ask our children, even this day, they're almost 10 and 8 when we come home after they've been with a babysitter. It's just part of the normal conversation, but how did the babysitter make you feel? Was there anything uncomfortable that happened while we were gone with the babysitter? Is there anything you want to discuss? And they know they can tell us anything, no matter what, that they're not going to get in trouble. They can talk to us. They know that we have built this foundation and this language with them, so they can talk to us. They're not going to freak us out if they say something. So I think it's very key to start from a young age, if you can. And if not, then parents can still jump in at a later age and build a foundation.
It sounds like go ahead, Justin.
Going back to, because we're talking about if something has happened, and we have some ideas on helping children and parents prevent, but if something does happen, I think it's real important for parents, because if parents listening hear this, or caregivers, or if they are prompted to start engaging their child a little bit more and hear something, there's two things that stand out to me. One is report suspected abuse. Don't investigate it. Report it. We're not the experts. Lindsay and I have written books about abuse and children's books. But if something happened to us, we would be, or one of our children, we would be reporting it, not investigating it. To seek justice for your child. The second is, and it's partially because of just American culture and how we are as Americans, Americans victim blame, default to victim blaming. Make sure you communicate in action and in words to the child, you did nothing wrong. You're not at fault. You're not to blame. Because what we said on the first question was, what's going on in the heart and mind of a child? Well, they think that they deserve it. They think they're responsible for it. And they think they're guilty. So someone needs to be the voice to them. I mean, a perpetrator is going to say something along the lines of, I do dirty things to you because you're a dirty child. But both by the perpetrator's actions and words, they will be communicating to the child, you're filthy, dirty, and guilty. So someone needs to be the voice of mercy and grace to that child and say to them what God thinks of them, which is, you're not guilty. You're not to blame. You need to repeat that. You need to not say, well, why? Because what's going to happen is a perpetrator is going to try to get the child to either do something to them or force them to receive horrible actions. So the child's going to feel responsible because they're going to feel like they let something happen to them or they did something. No, they touched another body part, or they let someone else touch their private part. They're going to feel guilty because it's so tangible. And so making sure that parents don't go into the kind of shamey, well, why did you let him touch you there? Don't you know better than to touch someone's private part? Like, the kind of shaming questions does not help. And all it does is side with the evildoer in shaming that child. So do everything you can, parents, to not blame or shame your child.
I would imagine some of that is just the parents reacting very fearfully, scared to death.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think absolutely. And you don't fault the parents. I mean, the emotions just kind of erupt, but if think through it now on the front end, absolutely.
Yeah, we're up against a hard break here, so let me just take a short break. When I come back, I want to ask you about those five words that a kid might hear, which are, don't you dare tell anybody. And that kid is going to hear that and know that there's some serious consequences if they ever tell anybody. And I'm sure every perpetrator says something along those lines. I'm talking to Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. We'll take a little break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with me today. We're talking about a book that Lindsay and Justin Holcomb wrote called God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. You think about the statistics that are out there on sexual abuse, and as I'm reading through these statistics, they're absolutely staggering. And it's a discussion that all parents need to have, and probably the younger the better. When a child is pursued by a perpetrator and has been violated in some way, and the perpetrator says, don't you dare tell anybody, what kind of position is this kid in, and how does he get outside from underneath that demand, that irrational command not to tell anybody?
Well, I love the question, and you're going straight for the bullseye. So just to frame just a little bit so parents know, God Made All of Me is actually for 3 to 8-year-olds, and it's actually a children's book. So the book actually has the conversation with the child that parents should be having. So we go over it's actually an illustrated child's book, and in the back we actually have a few things parents can do to help protect. And so your question, so just so people know what the resource actually is, number 6 on our list is throw out the word secret. So you hit the nail on the head. A perpetrator is going to try to threaten the child, make them feel guilty, and say, hey, don't tell anyone, this is our secret. And so one of the things a parent can do is throw out the word secret. Secret's a word that we just don't use in our house. There's a big difference between a secret and a surprise. Secrets can be isolating and lonely and scary. Surprises are fun and happy and exciting. So we just started very early with our daughters, and we just threw out the word secret. We don't ask them to keep a secret. They know secret is – there's a list of words of bad words. You know, stupid, hate, and secret are all words that we just don't use. It's so bad that we could tell you a few stories where some child is being, you know, friends with our kids, just being innocent, saying, hey, I have a fun secret to tell you. And it really is a surprise. And my daughters will – we don't keep secrets. No secrets. And they're a little bit vigilant, and it's wonderful.
That's fantastic.
So if some adult were to – do or say something to one of our daughters and say, hey, this needs to be our secret. Well, our daughters know secret is code word. It's something that sneaky people try to do. We don't keep secrets. So that becomes an avenue, one, to protect your child, but also that becomes a question is parents can easily say, hey, I want to ask you, son or daughter, whatever age you are, does anyone ever ask you to keep secrets? Like, this could be a really easy way to actually ask your child, because parents don't want to. You know, how do you start that conversation?
Yeah.
Hi, Tom. Just wanted to see, has anyone ever touched your private parts? I mean, it's just out of the blue.
Right.
And it can be really jolting to the child. But, hey, Tom, has anyone asked you to ever keep a secret? Because we don't want to keep secrets, because secrets can be scary, right? And surprises, actually having the secret conversation can be a really good way to, one, protect the child, also give them an on-ramp to actually say if something ever has happened. So, and because that's a tool. The secret is a tool a perpetrator uses to harm, to both sin against and commit a crime against a child.
One thing that Justin touched on is checking in with your child often, but not sitting them down for that 15-minute, you know, we're going to have a big conversation about this, but make the little check-ins or the touch points with your child over time short, but kind of often, you know, throughout the week, throughout the month. And just one big thing is just to always tell the child, you can tell me anything, no matter what happens. And drive that point home and again to the point that, you know, if they tell you something that's totally not related to sexual assault, that you handle it well. But just so they know if something happens or they encounter a situation that feels uncomfortable, they will know in their head, I can talk to my mom or my dad.
Both of you, as authors and as parents, are doing something so important to give us simple tools, something like, has anyone ever asked you to keep a secret? I mean, that to me is so brilliant. I don't know how I didn't think of that earlier and write a book and made my own millions. So then you guys went out and did it. But there's going to be times, I'm sure, where kids feel that they've had an awkward experience of some kind. And, you know, that's probably another conversation you have with them, isn't it? Have you had any periods where you felt uncomfortable?
Just give you an anecdote. I mean, our children, we actually have a little code that we use. If they're just in a social setting and they feel uncomfortable with a person in the room, we change what that code is. We actually have a little family code. One of our daughters can just walk up to us and say, hey, Mom, you have green eyes, or whatever that thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's code for us of, like, something's going on that they don't feel comfortable to say right now. So we know, intervene in some way. So, but the checking in, Lindsay talked about the importance of regular checking in. If you start these conversations early, as soon as you can, and just life conversation, that doesn't have to be about body parts and sex and sneaky people, but it just what Lindsay said, if your child knows they can come to you with anything, and anything that would be that we think might even be embarrassing, and you don't flinch or laugh or minimize it, they know they can bring other things to you. And so whenever one of our children says anything to us that it has, you know, we can tell this is important for them, we listen to it. And again, you don't sit down for 15 minutes and go, okay, Susie, let's talk about secrets. Let me lecture you about secrets and surprises. But that could be like on the way to school conversation where you have, a few minutes and you kind of just drop something in, or while you're watching a movie or a TV show. So finding ways to not make it one big conversation, but many, many, many really small conversations. And of course, if they open up and want to start saying more, then by all means, go as long as you can. But, you know, kids' attention span, you know, most parents know how long the attention span is. take what you can get when it starts coming to abstract things like this that children might not want to, you know, think about.
Mm-hmm. Lindsay,
we always encourage parents to have these conversations. You know, you spend time and money getting their best car seat, and you tell them to wear their seatbelt, and you make sure that you teach them how to swim so they don't drown in the pool, and you take them to doctors for shots or vitamins. So we're always taking care of our children in those aspects. This needs to be added to the agenda as well. And if parents haven't started and they have a 10 or 11 or 12, whatever age, start the conversation now. You can even read the book to your 15-year-old and have it kind of be a launching pad for a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But I just implore parents, you know, give your child this information. It empowers them greatly. It gives you a great, you know, interaction with your child to be able to talk about these things and the things that are happening in the world.
Mm. So I'm trying to, I'm thinking of the knowing the anatomy and being able to use the proper words seems like it would be a way to help protect kids against offenders, because if you put your hand on my shoulder and I go, "Don't touch my deltoid," you'd go, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, how do you know about a deltoid?" You know,
don't you
think of that as a shoulder? And the kid knows deltoid. You go, okay, this. So if you're calling the parts out the anatomically correct names, I think you're going to, that would certainly help against offenders. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And when they go in to talk to the detective, if the child is using some word that only the family knows, it's not going to uphold. It won't hold up in court because they'll be like, well, this kid's confused. It was really, really difficult when it comes to investigation and making a case.
There's a few reasons why the body part thing is so important. One thing, just Lindsay's, well, first, an investigation, the child, and we've actually heard stories of investigators talking to a child and they know, they're like, this is hard because we think something happened, but the child doesn't even have words for it. It won't hold up in the investigation. The second is just thinking about that child. If you tell them this is your knee and this is your shoulder, this is your body part, and you just give them normal names, but when it comes to private parts, they have really weird names, it actually builds in the shame of those body parts because it's something that you need to hide and not talk about. And so if it's just kind of matter of fact, like, this is what your body parts are called,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay. Like, we're not saying like you never have a nickname or whatever people will do, and just kind of playful names, but you unintentionally build into your child like, oh, that's the dirty parts. We don't talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
We whisper and make up funny names. Now, the other thing is exactly what you said. A perpetrator is going to try to turn the private part into a plaything.
Mm-hmm.
That helps with the child and the grooming. But also what you said, if a perpetrator is touching a body part and they say, please don't touch that, and they say what it is, well, that is unnerving to a perpetrator. They don't – it actually acknowledges and mirrors to them what they're actually doing. And hopefully the truth of that reflection breaks through to the darkness a little bit. But for numerous reasons, that's like four reasons why it's a good idea just to have the private part conversation.
I'm talking to Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. Their book, God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. And we're talking about all the issues surrounding abuse and how kids can be protected against predators. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Justin and Lindsay in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're with me today. I've got Justin and Lindsay Holcomb. If you just joined us, we're talking about their book, God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. And you have, if you're just tuning in, I promise you have to go back and listen to the entire interview, because the material and what we've discussed is so important. And Lindsay, you just made some very important reference to the best car seat and the best vitamins and the safest everything. And if we're not having these frank discussions with our kids and calling body parts what they are and not feeling shame and contributing to the awkwardness of it, we're doing our kids a big injustice.
Definitely.
you nailed it. And that's what we're, that's what as parents and caregivers we're called to do, is actually do the best we can to train up these children to actually see the world and themselves and how the world and how themselves relate to God properly. And we're shepherding. You're shepherding the hearts and minds and bodies of these children. And we're supposed, that's what the responsibility is for parents is. And because this isn't the way it's supposed to be, parents, because of sin, we have to have this conversation. But before the fall, the plan of the world was not to have to warn children that there are going to be people who are going to want to exploit and use and harm them and sin against them and do crimes against them. And so it's unnerving to actually have to have these conversations with children. But Lindsay and I have she used to work with in the Sexual Assault Crisis Center. She actually worked. She was the adult victims advocate, and her friend was the child advocate. So if we don't have these conversations, even worse is that we actually have to deal with the reality and the destruction that can take place. And the destruction of sexual abuse against a child is devastating. It bestows to them an identity of being damaged goods. Many children who are abused, especially if they are abused in a Christian context from a church leader or a Christian family member, they are unlikely to ever step foot in a church and consider Christianity viable. Like I said early on, it because Satan hates God, he hates God's image bearers, and he will use whatever tools and weapons he has to devastate images of God. One of the most effective tools of the enemy is sexual abuse against a child, because it is so destructive, and what it does spiritually and can do spiritually to the child is so powerful. It is an effective tool for evil. So parents being as strategic as the perpetrators is the key, and that's why we're just thrilled to be able to be talking about this to as many people as possible and get the word out on just ways that parents can help protect their children.
I have a million questions, and I don't have a ton of time left, so I'm going to start just asking them. Now, we've got a trusted relative, someone we thought we trusted, who turns out has violated a child. We have to be, as parents, taking our kids seriously every time they come to us, regardless of how painful it might be down the road.
Absolutely. And we can kind of rapid fire these. So
okay.
I'll dive in on this one as
yeah.
well, if you have something. Someone who violates, so if they violated and it's been investigated and they've been charged, that person has forfeited their right to ever be alone with a child ever again.
Amen.
So if it's grandpa and grandpa has been mm-hmm. found guilty, or even if he hasn't been found guilty by the authorities, but there's plenty of reason to believe it's the case, you can forgive him. And we've seen stories of a parent, someone who's a parent, forgiving their parent, the grandparent, for violating. You can forgive someone for their sin and their crime. You don't restore the relationship back to what it was to allow for future sin and crimes. They have forfeited their right to ever be alone. And especially even if it's not for sure, but if your child comes to you and says, hey, Uncle so-and-so, Aunt so-and-so keeps on asking me to do this thing, well, that's when the parent just – you err on the side of protecting your kid and you have the most awkward conversation ever, because I'd rather have that most awkward conversation ever than the worst conversation, which is, Mom, Dad, I tried to tell you, but you didn't listen. And then my daughters mm-hmm. later on tell me, well, we tried to tell you, but you ignored us. I don't want to ever hear that. I would happily sacrifice some awkwardness for the sake of never having to be responsible for the devastation one of my daughters had to go through.
Mm. Lindsay, this question might be coming your direction. If you have been the victim, and I would agree with both of you that sexual abuse has to be the enemy's number one ploy, because if you can uh-huh. injure a child in that way as young as possible, you've got a port of entry going on through the rest of their adult life, I would guess.
Absolutely. And, as we've talked about, that it creates an identity of just shame, of anger, of distrust. A lot of the victims don't want to come back into a church if that's been the place of their abuse. But it just creates such a identity and such a kind of mindset of I'm damaged goods and I'm dirty and, you know, where can I go to rid of my disgrace, going back to, you know, just a kind of saying of that sense. But I think it does create, if the victim is not met with belief and not met with proper advocacy and proper care from their family, and it's just swept under the carpet as we're not going to talk about this, this isn't something that our family is going to ever discuss again, they live in just isolation. They live in just fear of ever voicing any of the problems that are coming from their abuse. And then 20, 30, 40 years later, they're just dealing with a lot of pain that has not been resolved and pain that has just been building up over the years. And when I worked at the Sexual Assault Crisis Center, I would see the adults, and 80% of them had been abused as children. And same story, their parents did not believe them. You know, you're just making this up as a child. This isn't something we're going to talk about. We don't want to air our dirty laundry into the community and have anyone discuss this. So therefore, no more conversation will be about this. And so I would see them decades later just in so much pain that you would have thought it had happened yesterday. And so unless we as parents and as a community can come alongside these children and say, we are for you, we're going to protect you. If something happens, we're going to believe you. And then we're going to come along and find all the options that you need for justice and you need for hope and healing. The child will walk around with the identity of just pain and shame and anger and disbelief, which is horrible for their futures and who they are as images of Christ.
Let me ask you this. If parents that are hearing this and they're driving home right now and they're thinking, this needs to be a discussion I have with my spouse, like right away, and they discover that the reason they maybe have never had too in-depth of a conversation about this is because there's skeletons in their own closet that have never come out.
Absolutely. Yeah. We found a lot of parents weren't having that conversation.
Just
because of that.
Yeah.
Because they have that their own sense of shame, and because they don't know how to talk about body parts and sexuality and what's happened to them and their own pain, they actually avoid it. And I understand that. Problem is that we have children who still need our help. I'm the one between the two of us who was actually sexually abused when I was 11 by an extended family member. So I kind of know the silencing shame that has when you're 10 and 11 years old. And it'll stay with you for a while, rest of your life. But, and again, we're not making millions on these books, but there's another book that Lindsay and I wrote together called Rid of My Disgrace. It's Rid of My Disgrace, Hope and Healing for Victims of Sexual Abuse. That's actually a book for victims, adult victims. I mean, there are adults who are reading it, or teenagers could read it, but it's diving into the deep end of suffering, mm-hmm. and saying, this is what happened to you, and this is what the person and work of Jesus Christ and the grace of God means, and this is how the grace of God found in the person of Jesus and who he is and what he did, death and resurrection, the grace of God is found there, and the grace of God actually responds to the disgrace that you feel. The title comes from Tamar, who was abused in 2 Timothy by her brother, and she said, who will rid me of this disgrace? So that book, Rid of My Disgrace, is our answer for who will rid Tamar and all other victims of their disgrace is actually the creator of the universe, who is the giver of grace and sent his only son, Jesus Christ, to die for our sins, raise again so we can have hope of eternal life, and who has conquered our enemy. So we kind of unpack what does the good news of the gospel mean for the bad news of the disgrace the evil one's trying to give us. So when parents go home and have this conversation, being ready to listen and believe them, that's the most powerful thing you can ever do as a supporter of a victim, is listen and believe. And I can quote you some psychological studies on this and psychology journals, but listening and believing is really powerful. So if you go have that conversation with your spouse and they say, well, the reason we haven't talked about it is because when I was 7, grandpa did this. When I was in college, I experienced date rape. There's lots of reasons that someone would do that. Well, that's when this is a whole different conversation. It is, I'm here to listen, and I'm so sorry, and let's find a way to get you some hope and healing. So we might be opening Pandora's box, but thankfully, Pandora's box isn't just a box of monsters that we can't deal with, but we actually have a creator and savior who can conquer our enemy, heal us in our pain, and give us hope for the future.
All right. Now, I'm already out of time, so I'm going to ask one last question, and then hopefully you guys are so loving and kind and wise. And so if people are driving home right now and they think, all right, give me an assignment that I should pay attention to, that I need to take this so seriously. Give me some steps I need to take starting like today.
What, is it with a child?
No, as parents driving home, and I've got kids, what's an assignment I need to start today?
Okay.
I think one thing you can do, it doesn't matter the age. I mean, obviously, you know, if they're a baby, but if they're at the age where you can have a conversation with them is, you know, one, you could read the book with them, but if it's even just having a conversation of, hey, if anybody ever makes you feel uncomfortable or you feel scared, let's make a list of who are the people you can talk to. Who are your trusted people? And make the list, you know, four or five folks so that there's options. And I think that's a great place to start, at least with that, and having that conversation kind of get going of, you know, there are tricky people out there. We use that word tricky. There are some tricky people in the community that, you know, might make you feel uncomfortable. Let's have a conversation about this. Or I saw this movie, or go ahead.
Sorry, honey. Go ahead.
Oh, you can watch a TV show with them and have that be kind of a launching pad for, hey, that person in that show. There was the movie Show Dogs, and we had a conversation with our girls about that. And so you can have conversations from TV shows or movies as you pick out the tricky person, and that person should not have done that to that child. Why do you think? And what do you think made that kid feel uncomfortable? What could that kid have done? Who could they have gone to? You know, you can have those conversations with your child. But I would tell the parents, start now. You know, it doesn't matter how old they are. If they're 18 years of age, start now, especially as they get into the teenage years and you need to be thinking about texting and on the computer. Start the conversation.
Here, I got four. Lindsay hit the first one, which is, hey, children, we can't always be there. We love you and protect you. Mm-hmm. But think through some people that you trust. Who would you talk to? So making that list of safe people. Two, having the secret conversation, which we talked about earlier, which is, hey, has anyone ever asked you to keep a secret? Because we don't do secrets. Secrets are scary, isolating. Surprises are good. Three, talk about body parts. Age appropriate, but talk about body parts, appropriate names for them, and how they work, and what just basics of that. And last one is talk about touch. There's two different kinds of touch, appropriate and inappropriate touch. And talk to give them a category that you can be touched and it's wrong and it's inappropriate. You can be punched, but there's other ways that touch is inappropriate. It's not good touch and bad touch, because that's actually confusing, because some bad touch physically feels good. So a child, don't confuse them. Inappropriate and appropriate touch. So who are safe people? Secrets and surprises, body parts and their names, and appropriate and inappropriate touch. Those are like the top four conversations parents should start having. And here's the thing. You can actually talk about those without having to try to thread the needle on talking about tricky people and darkness and evil, horrible things. You're just talking about basic stuff. Mm-hmm. You're actually not talking about sexual abuse of the child. You're just talking around it and making it easy to actually go further in the conversation if needed.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You've been a gift to my show and a gift to my listeners. So appreciate all your work and your insight. And I love you too. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for letting us be on the platform and tell people about this and ask such great questions.
Indeed. Justin and Lindsay Holcomb have been my guests. Their book, God Made All of Me, a book to help children protect their bodies. Have a great night, everyone. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.